Mini episode 515 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 515. You have your favorite football talkers in the universe. At least I hope that's the case. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross are FDH Lounge dignitaries coming at you to discuss Super Bowl 49. For the third season in a row, we have been following the NFL all the way through, week by week, giving you our picks, giving you our analysis, and building to the very end here, the climax of this 2014-2015 season. Coming off of Championship Sunday, I was 1-1 after being 2-2 the previous week, 2-2 the week before that. So something's got to give this week because I'm not picking a total. I'm only picking a side. I got to go either above or under 500. My picks for the year, 135, 127, and 4, 27, 23, and 1 on my big three. Only 6-11 on my lock picks. Kyle with a 1-1 last week, a sterling 53-36 for the year, including 7-4 in the playoffs, streaking at exactly the right time. My man, Kyle Ross, congratulations on a tremendous run through the playoffs that I know, Kyle, will extend through Super Bowl 49.
Well, I know you're hoping that because I know we have the same team.
Yes.
And by the way, I obviously am. Spoiler alert. Yeah, and obviously I am here. And, you know, I've been kind of waiting a week and a half to give this pick out, really, because, you know, it's funny. Obviously my friends all know what I do. Otherwise they wouldn't really be my friends, would they? And everyone, you know, whenever it's kind of a big time in the sports calendar year, they always come, oh, you know, it's got to be busy for you right now. You know, I mean, you know, March Madness, Bulls, it's certainly the case. But the one time when they're wrong about that is really these 2 weeks, the Super Bowl. You kind of got 2 weeks to make one pick. And I don't know about you, Ricky. Actually, I kind of do, I guess, because I've been texting with you regularly. It did not take me long to come to my conclusion for this game.
Yeah, same here. And again, I'm going to be sticking with, and this will totally give it away to everybody, the pick that I've been making all year. This is the matchup that I had predicted all year. You were entitled to crow a year ago, Kyle, because you went wire to wire on your prediction, which came true. I am a game away from that being the case in the 2014-2015 season. We got a lot to get into this week here with all of the storylines of the game. I have my usual oddities for the Super Bowl here, different historical nuggets that a warped mind like mine loves to look up, some statistical things. We'll get to all of that. I figure we should start once again, as we've been doing through the playoffs, by taking a look back at the previous round, what got us here into this game. Start with the NFC Championship game because it came first, the Green Bay at Seattle Classic that we had there. And my instinct on this game, Kyle, I talked about this with last year's Super Bowl, these outlier games that if you played them 100 times, maybe it would go that way 3 times. I think for Seattle, it was looked as bad as they did in that game. To me, that's another big outlier game, maybe another 3-100 kind of a deal where Green Bay's dominating them for as much of the game as they were. And again, the score didn't indicate it, the extent of the domination. And in the end, that ended up costing them. Although, in fairness to Russell Wilson, first 4-interception game that he's had pro or I believe even in college, 2 of those were, if you know those backyard games the kids play with the scoops, you catch the ball in a scoop and you scoop it to your friends, pretty much Kurse did that on 2 of the interceptions. Here you go. Here's the ball. Here you go. So only really 2 of them, I think, was Wilson culpable. And there's a lot that we can hang Mike McCarthy on for the in-game decisions, and I think rightfully so.
Yeah.
I do think, though, lost in all of this is he's not getting enough credit for the game planning and how they attacked Seattle. to get the ball up and down the field, because a friend of mine called me during the game kind of to rub it in, because he's somebody who's not a believer in Seattle and likes to just sort of play contrarian on stuff. And I said, look, aside from the decision to kick the field goals and whatnot, this is the best coaching job we've seen in a while, aside from probably Urban Meyer in the national championship game. McCarthy, I think, is not getting enough credit for that part of it, even as he is justifiably getting hung for being a wuss and kicking those field goals.
Yeah, I mean, I always say this, the underdog, and I don't know how many times I've gone over this either with you or with people that I watch games with, it just absolutely drives me insane when an underdog, which Green Bay was, and by the way, I had Green Bay, that was my win last week, I had them plus the points, I chalked that, I almost never did, I actually chalked that one up as a winner so early that I felt comfortable rooting for Seattle to come back. I've had winning the Super Bowl, at least for, there was a 2-week span, I think, when I got off their bandwagon midseason. But anyway, with these underdogs, they come out with this aggressive strategy, and I really like what you said, because they do deserve some credit. They came out aggressive strategy, and that's what got them the lead, but it should have been a bigger lead because he didn't stay aggressive, and he being McCarthy. That's the problem with these underdogs. I don't know how many times we see it. How many times do the underdogs race out to these leads and they blow games late? Why? Because they stopped being aggressive and they stopped doing what got them the lead in the first place. It's really frustrating to watch as someone who primarily bets underdogs. Now, a lot of times you still escape with the cover, but, in Green Bay's case, that's what really cost them. I mean, I was on, I don't know how much you – stay and look on Twitter during these games. I think I saw you mm-hmm. on there doing stuff during yep. that game. The first field goal, everyone's like, ooh, that could come back to haunt him. And when he did it again, everyone was killing him. It's not like this was some shocking thing. I guess I shouldn't say everyone, but the people who I generally gravitate toward their opinions were all like, this is really bad. It is going to come back and cost them. And I know that the people who don't like Seattle, like this friend you're talking about, were like, oh, well, what are you guys talking about? It's, what it was, 16-3 or whatever it was. And Seattle's dead. They look like crap. What do you guys complain about these field goals? You need to take the points. You see what happens, man, with that conservative strategy. McCarthy's not been a very good in-game decision maker for years now. I remarked after the game that he probably should be fired. Maybe that's too harsh. I don't know. I mean, Green Bay's been good for a while. He also is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, by the way, which kind of ensures they're going to be good for, years to come as well. But it was really bad. And you saw Seattle, by contrast, take the risk with that fake field goal, which was perfectly executed. And that's why they won the game. They were just riskier. They went deep on third down and overtime to win the game. And that's what we see. I mean, it's all really – I have to say, and to your point about Green Bay, Seattle, how bad they looked, I remarked to a buddy through the first three quarters, I had never seen them play this bad in 3 years since Wilson came. And what was funny is I thought I had jinxed them because – I had told him, Brian, Brian, I had told him the stat about how Seattle has had the lead in every game the last 3 years. I told him that, and I was like, here's where, because he's not a big buyer on Seattle either. And I was like, check this out. Every game that Seattle's played the last 3 years, they've had a lead at least at one point in the game. And he was like, wow. And then sure enough, they come out and lay the real egg for three quarters. I was like, well, maybe I jinxed them. And then they came back and took the lead before it went into overtime. So I was like, well, the streak's intact. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't know if you thought about it, Ricky. I thought the whole thing was payback for that Atlanta game a couple years ago. Where they came back and, ironically, the defense, which we always laud, and rightfully so, the defense gave up a field goal at the end of regulation at that one, and it ended up costing them, and, they lost the game there and only forced overtime on this occasion. But, we've seen this with Seattle before. They don't get blown out. That's the sign of a good team. That's why we're right now. I mean, if you don't believe in point differential, as a better predictor of future outcomes than one loss record. You know, first of all, I think you're an idiot. But second of all, I mean, just look at the two teams that are playing in the Super Bowl. They have the two best point differentials, just like last year. I mean, it doesn't always happen. And yes, I know people who don't like advanced stats will say, what about the Giants who had a negative point differential won the Super Bowl? Well, that team stunk and they were the worst Super Bowl winner ever. Okay. And they got hot. That's all I have to say to that. So, you know, I mean, generally, good, you know, I mean, both of these teams, I mean, these teams are 1 and 2 in my power rankings. Before we go into our pick, I'll say this, and then we'll talk about New England in a moment. I mean, there's not as much to say on that game, I don't think. But, you know, this is a very on paper even matchup, I think. These are two teams who generally do not get blown out. I know New England had the one bad game against Kansas City early in the year, and yeah, they usually take care of business against lesser opponents. That's the sign of a good team, not kind of close wins, you know, oh, this team knows how to win. Well, what does that mean?
Well, excellent points. And Seattle, I don't remember if it was the second field goal or when it was. It was one of the field goals. There was one where they completed a pass to like the half-yard line and then set up for the field goal. Like, why would you run a pass pattern short of the end zone if you're going to kick it anyways? Because, again, kicking it from that angle at about 17 yards out because they were on the right hash, that's not a gimme. Sometimes you'd rather be back a few yards. So that made sense on no level what they were doing there. But you look at how much Seattle struggled to win. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one thing about the field goal thing so people are clear and maybe have a better understanding, because I, you know, you and I think maybe you and I are on the same page, and I think, and we, you know, we talk about this off air, and so we know where each other are coming from. But just so people who are listening understand, the reason why not just us but other people are so adamant about going for it on 4th and 1 at the goal line isn't because we hate field goals. It's because of the kind of risk-reward involved. You know, there's this fear that if you don't get in, it's the end of the world. And I don't agree with that, because if you don't get in, okay, you get stuffed at the goal line. You're not going to, you know, you're probably not going to lose 10 yards on the play. If you do, then that's a bad play call. But let's say you get stuffed at the goal line, you don't get in. Well, then the other team is taking over at the 1-foot line, and as long as you can play good defense, you're going to get the ball back in good field position, and you're going to probably just need 1 or 2 first downs to get the same damn field goal anyway. And then the reward of the whole thing, if you go for a 4th and 1, is obviously you get the touchdown instead of a field goal. So I just wanted to be clear that people understand kind of this argument.
Great point. And, again, it's one of these things where Seattle is such a great team. You have to punch them in the mouth. You have to really get them down,
yes,
step on their throat if you're going to beat them, because my sense is, contrary to, I think, the way a lot of people looked at it coming out of that game, they almost look bulletproof to me, because they're like one of these cyborgs in a movie that you shoot at it for 30 minutes and throw grenades in the face and whatever, and it keeps coming at you. Seattle is still standing, and that is not a good thing for New England. And turning to that game, I think the perception actually coming out of that was completely backwards from what I just said. Let's leave aside Tom Brady's deflated balls for a second here and that part of the game, and just focus on what happened on the field. And as you said, talking about what happened on the field there ain't going to take long, except here's the way that I want to frame this, is for the second year in a row, when the championship games were done, the early rush to the betting window was on the AFC team. The sense of how good,
yes,
Denver looked last year versus New England and what New England did to Indianapolis here. And I don't on any level get that. I don't get all the mouth breathers out there, the Joe Public types of, "Durr, New England looked so good against that Indianapolis team, and Seattle didn't look so good against Green Bay. Durr." You talk about an oversimplification for where both of those teams are at this point. The early run of ignorant money on New England is a very good reason why people, I think, should be on Seattle.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. I want to bring up points that people are confused. Again, you know, I talk about point differential. Well,
yes,
you know, maybe the less informed are going to say, well, New England won by 38 and Seattle only won by won by 6. Well, what are you talking about?
It's over the course of a season, a-holes.
Yes. By the way, I have somehow in the course of the first 15 minutes of the program adopted your fairly demeaning tone about the general public when I'm doing an opinion of when John Q. Walmart speaks, he sounds like, you know, a real dumbass. But anyway,
thank you, Al Snow.
Year-to-date point differential. You're right. Point differential is something that, you know, you have to wait a couple weeks to see. You know, I mean, you can't
right.
just base, you know, like, you know, if, you know, the Tennessee Titans, for instance, I think they won pretty good against Kansas City in week one, if I remember. That was not a predictor of future success. It was just one game, okay? they only won one game the rest of the way.
Right.
Anyway, so let me get back. But you're right. And your first point, it sounds like, in breaking down the Super Bowl is my first point. It's that this is eerily reminiscent of last year. And I was in – it was funny. I was in Vegas for the conference championship games last year. And there was this big rush to the window to bet the Broncos because the Seahawks escaped by the skin of their teeth against San Francisco, who you and I said was a better team than either of the two AFC teams.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, one could make a case that Green Bay is better than New England because they did beat New England. That was close at home. And I don't think Green Bay is definitively better than New England. It's like, but then again, I don't think San Francisco was definitively better than Denver last year.
We'll know after the Super Bowl. We'll know.
If New England were to make it competitive,
then Green Bay was the second-best team.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, it's funny. You know, I always point to that early money during the regular season. But if you listen to the pros, they'll tell you there's one exception. There's one game every year where the early money is not a reflection of what the Sharps are doing. That is the Super Bowl. And we saw that last year where Seattle opened as a slight favorite and Denver was quickly bet to a favorite and, you know, Seattle obviously did what they did. And then this year it was even more – the advanced line for this game, it was funny. I actually got a hold of them before the conference championship games were played. I got what the four potential Super Bowl matchup lines would be. And – it said Seattle -3 over New England. And I'll be honest with you, I was a little surprised at that, a field goal. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, ooh, if it's that, I'm like, you know, I'd probably still stick with Seattle, but, you know, the full field goal, I don't know. But then, you know, obviously now they're the underdog, and I think there's a lot of value in that. Look, neither of us thought the game would end up like it did last year, and I think, at least I don't think it'll end up even close to that this year, but you're right. I just see there being a huge similarity between, you know, this and last year with the immediate reaction to conference championship weekend, and it's a reaction that, like you, I do not agree with.
I think that what you're
because
saying is right on the money there.
The Colts stink. That's another thing you and I agree on. You know what? That's harsh. Let me retract that. They don't stink. They're just a flawed team behind Andrew Luck that doesn't match up with the Patriots. I think that's a better statement. It's kind of funny. The previous week when they won over Denver, we kind of talked about, well, you know, let's not go coronating the Colts as the hot young contender. That game had a lot to do with, you know, what turned out to be an injured Peyton Manning and possibly a declining Broncos roster, you know, that has since fired their coach. So, you know, again, New England played well, and, you know, the deflated, I don't even want to spend any time, it's a stupid storyline, or, you know, deflate gate, that's dumb. I don't like that name. Gate.
Balghazi. How about Balghazi?
That's at least funnier. That's at least funny.
Okay.
Although I know that, you know, I don't need, you know, heaven knows I don't want to hear your take on the original Gazi, but that's okay. But you
probably get your goal.
But anyway, a deflated football camp isn't going to change 38 points. The Colts just stunk that game. But, you know, it kind of avalanched late. Especially because it was a later game, I anticipated. I was surprised a little bit last year by the initial flow of money to Denver. This year, I was predicting it because, you know, again, I was watching with a buddy, and he's like, oh, I think New England's going to beat Seattle this year. Of course, he liked Denver last year too. So, But I was like, yeah, you know, I don't agree with what you're saying, but I definitely see a lot of people agreeing with you. Because it was the second game, it was a blowout, and most people thought Seattle got lucky, and they did get lucky, okay? It's not like it was all skill, that comeback. I mean, they needed a lot of things to go their way in the last quarter, and they all did.
Right.
But, you know, it's predictable, but it's something I'm looking to take advantage of. Spoiler alert, I think everyone knows who we're picking in this game now.
Pretty much, yeah. The only other thing that I will say about Balghazi is go check out, if you haven't already or seen anything about it, at sharpfootballanalysis.com. The Patriots having just a statistically inconceivably less amount, I'm phrasing that horribly, but way below average for fumbles the last couple of years at home in a manner that doesn't make sense if somebody's not cheating. So check that out, draw your own conclusions.
Yeah, I'll say this, though, and I actually know that guy, Warren Sharp, who wrote it.
Okay.
But someone who I don't know, but who I read, and unfortunately is, I know his first name because it's Kyle. His last name is escaping me. I think it's Wagner, maybe. I could be wrong in that. Regardless, he writes the regression column for Deadspin. He actually had posted today, because I saw the Sharp thing, and I was like, wow, this is pretty crazy. He wrote a pretty decent counterpoint to the Warren Sharp article, which I also think is worth reading. At the end of the day, I've encouraged you to read it if you haven't, Ricky. But at the end of the day, just, you know, another thing, you know, that I've always been big on, I always tell people, you know, your Buckeyes kind of, you know, even though they killed Oregon in the championship game, found this out. You know, there's no luck in recovery. There's no skill, I mean, in recovering fumbles. It's one of those things that should be close to 50%. So to the original point by Warren Sharp, yes, it's odd about New England's fumble ratio, but it's not unprecedented. So I hear you. He made some good points, but this other guy did too. So
I think the point, though, I don't want to spend too much time on this. I think the point was you can't lose fumbles if you don't put it on the ground in the first place. And I think that's what he was pointing out. It's not like they were so great at recovering them.
Yeah.
They just weren't dropping the ball in the first place. And what causes that? So that was
thing. I wanted to take it to kind of a next level. That's kind of like along with the field goal thing. That's another big thing of mine that I would like to tell people. Is that, you know, when one team, if there's four fumbles in a game and one team recovers all four of them, that's not because they're great at recovering fumbles. It's because they're just lucky.
Right. Right.
So,
absolutely.
That's another thing I wanted to bring up.
Both of those. People can check out both columns, make up their own mind. Before we get to some of the fine points of the game here, what has become a tradition on the show, some Super Bowl oddities. And this is the foundation of a notes column. You'll find us the same place this week as the show, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. Some of the oddities here. Seattle is trying to become the team of the decade. They're going to have a huge head start on this if they win their second consecutive Super Bowl. No team of the decade has ever beaten a previous team or the previous team of the decade in the Super Bowl. So they will be trying to make that happen. You have New England in their first game back at University of Phoenix Stadium since Super Bowl 42, their loss to the Giants. Two teams have tried to do this before. Win a Super Bowl at the site of a previous heartbreak. The Colts managed that in Super Bowl 5 after losing the infamous Super Bowl 3 in Miami at the Orange Bowl. The Vikings failed to do so at Tulane Stadium in New Orleans in both Super Bowl 4 and Super Bowl 9. This game marks the third instance of teams who are each in their third Super Bowl in the last 10 years. That happened previously, Super Bowl 13. With Pittsburgh and Dallas, and Super Bowl 24 in San Francisco and Denver. Coaches facing their old team in a Super Bowl are 1-1. Now, Matt Reeves was fired by the Broncos and then lost to them in Super Bowl 33 with Atlanta. John Gruden was traded by Oakland, beat them the next year in Super Bowl 36 with Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl. So with Pete Carroll having been canned by New England, that precedent there is not good for him. You have East Coast, West Coast Super Bowls. West Coast is 3-1, but the East's only win came 2 years ago with Baltimore over San Francisco. This is the first Super Bowl ever. Here's one that's really obscure. Two teams who have followed the other team into a Super Bowl. Seattle did so with Super Bowl 40. the year after New England made the Super Bowl. Now New England follows Seattle into the Super Bowl and coincidentally plays them. So I don't know what that exactly signifies. Perhaps Pete Exelm could tell us if we got out a Ouija board. And again, there has been great continuity in the Super Bowl on the AFC side since the new millennium. Sixth appearance for New England. You've had three appearances for Pittsburgh, two apiece for Baltimore and Indianapolis. Only two teams have made it once out of the AFC since the new millennium, Oakland and then, of course, Denver last year. NFC is just the opposite. It is Kyle Ross's socialist America here. Everybody makes it once, apparently. You like that? You like that? The Giants of Seattle have made it three times, and they lead the NFC. So you've got the NFC and the AFC leaders in Super Bowl appearances in this new millennium facing one another in this game. Also,
The Giants were in that horrible Super Bowl against Baltimore in 2000. One of the worst games
Yes, they were. And something else that nobody really remembers, too, that the run of Super Bowls with New England, if you want to look at it on the calendar, actually kind of started in 97 when Belichick was still the defensive coordinator there. Seven appearances in 19 years. We have never seen a run like that in the Super Bowl era. Over a period of time, and that's almost 40% of Super Bowl history, no team in 19 years even comes that close to the 7-19 for the Patriots if you throw 97 into the mix. So that franchise is on a heck of a roll. And obviously so is Seattle much more recently, all three of their appearances in the last decade. But looking at some of the statistics on field here, as we've been doing throughout the playoffs, passing offense.
I wanted to say two things.
Go ahead. What do you got?
About your oddities before we move it. You're right. I'm not really building any drama to who I'm picking in the game. I don't know if I mentioned this on the show. There was an excellent article, though. I think it was in the New York Times, so I know you didn't read it. And then it was republished. It was republished by Deadspin about the circadian advantage, and it talked about this huge edge teams from the Western time zone have against teams in the Eastern time zone from the Eastern time zone at night. And, I think you talked about that. It hasn't happened too much in the Super Bowl. Now, Baltimore did beat San Francisco just 2 years ago. But this
in
game,
New Orleans.
Remember, yeah, but
yeah.
Yes, but this game, remember, is being played out west. I wanted to say that. So you can look it up
Arizona.
By Googling the circadian advantage if you want to read it up. There's a group of researchers at Stanford did this. I like that. And the other thing is, too, I was thinking about New England, too. Because I thought back to that first Super Bowl they made when Parcells was still the head coach and they kind of got overwhelmed by the Brett Favre and Desmond Howard-led Green Bay Packers, how old we've all become. But the only other team I could think of that's really even come close to this, the other franchise, was the 49ers of 81-94, who went 5-for-5 in Super Bowls, but, you know, to your point, that's not as long a period of time.
Well, and here's the thing, too. San Francisco is actually comparable to New England in terms of being a team that was a threat to extend team of the decade into the next decade. Because really, until the moment that Steve Young went down in like 96, they were still in it. They'd won a Super Bowl. They lost a couple of NFC championship games to the Cowboys. New England making this kind of a run is not unprecedented. San Francisco did it. And then when the wheels came off with them, they really, really came off. I'll tell you what, too, and this is something, this is an angle you're not going to hear talked about a lot, but you mentioned the 97 Super Bowl that New England and Green Bay played. Overlooked precursor to what we're seeing here because of how much of the Seattle organization came out of when Holmgren went over to Seattle. Guys like John Schneider, the genius general manager that has built the Seattle Seahawks, obviously coming back to New England. That game there, we couldn't have imagined when we were watching it, but it was the hatching of two future dynasties, one in New England, one in Seattle. Again, 18 years later, and as you know, I'm saying this, I'm in complete disbelief as to how long ago that seemed, how old that makes us, clearly. But, those are excellent points on your part as far as in the circadian thing.
I was a junior in high school. I was a junior
wow.
in high school when that game was played. A junior high school. And a lot of, who knew? By the way, I think if I remember. I actually started while you were talking. I wanted to look something up. Yes, that was the only Super Bowl, by the way. I take that back. There was that was the only Super Bowl to be a push at the betting window.
Green Bay, New England. That's Super Bowl.
The only
right.
one to be a push. By the way, I'm just going to start hyping people and hope that, you know, people go to them and say they heard of it because of us. There is a wonderful, you should read this too, Ricky, unless you already have, some wonderful stuff written about Black Sunday in Vegas. It was the second Steelers, well, I guess there were three of them because there was the one in the 90s, but the second of the two ones in the 70s between the Steelers and Cowboys.
Yeah, in 79. Yep.
Yeah, now I don't know if you know about this. I actually, shockingly, despite working in the industry, did not. You know, obviously back then, you know, you had a lot more rogue operations and people weren't quite as sharp as they are today. But the house got massacred on that game because they opened
the
spread. Yep, they got middled. They opened the spread at, I believe, like 3 and then closed it. It went to 4.5 and then the game was, you know, a 4-point spread. And so they got killed by people who bet the game both -3 and +4.5. So it was pretty interesting stuff.
And I think in some instances, the very sharp people who were getting action on both sides and ended up cashing 2 winning tickets. And
a lot of people do that. I mean, there may be people, and I don't know if the spread's going to go any higher for this game anymore. I don't think it is because of, you know, your Deflategate Bulgazi situation. I think that, you know, 1.5 or I think it was 2 was the highest they ever got. Is the highest this number is going to be. And then, you know, obviously Seattle, you know, -2, -2.5, -3, if you were real aggressive and betted maybe even early before their game with Green Bay was over, which would be pretty crazy, seeing as you didn't know they were going to win. You know, I mean, there's a pretty big thing there. So, I mean, if this winds up being a 1-point game, I mean, I guess some real sharp people might cash in big.
Very possibly, yeah. It went to 1 point for the Patriots laying that off of the early pick'em. As far as the stats for the game coming into a team stats regular season, passing offense, no real surprise here when you consider how they run their offenses. New England 9th in the league in passing, Seattle 27th in rushing offense, New England 18th, although that's, as we saw in the Baltimore game, that's deceiving because they don't always commit to the run. And as we saw in the Indianapolis games, they do pretty good when they do. Rushing offense, number 1 for Seattle. But as we said, going into Championship Sunday, a lot of that's because Russell Wilson with 800-plus rushing yards is essentially your second running back. Passing defense, New England 17th. Of course, Seattle 1st in that. Rush defense, New England 9th and Seattle 3rd. Time of possession, this may come into play a little bit here. New England, 29-37 was their average during the season. Seattle, 32-11. Pretty good padding in terms of their edge in time of possession. Third down offense, New England, a whopping 44.3%. Seattle's not bad, 42.5%. Third down defense, 40.2% for the Patriots, 37.1% for Seattle. Very good there. Is there anything out of those numbers that seems like a real surprise to you? Nothing really kind of was to me.
No, the only thing I would add is, you know, that New England, you know, until Marshawn Lynch really got going late, Seattle was struggling to run the ball against Green Bay. And, you know, again, we had talked a great deal about how Green Bay's run defense had improved throughout the year, but I certainly didn't think it had improved to that extent. New England, pretty good run D. If they can slow down Seattle's running attack, you know, that's probably their key, although Seattle has shown in the Carolina game that they can hit the big pass when necessary. I think that's an underrated part of the game. You know, really, the other thing I would add on the other side is Tom Brady, not a good deep ball thrower this year, only completed 28% of his passes, 20 yards or more. That ranked in the bottom 5 in the league, and that could be trouble here against this secondary. You know, you talk about not committing to the run against Baltimore. You know, I thought that was a tactical decision because Baltimore is very good against the run and their secondary was in shambles. So I think New England, especially because they fell down early, just said, screw the run. We're going to throw on the secondary. It worked. They came back and won. And then obviously with the Colts, you know, some of those rushing stats, I'll take them with a grain of salt. you know, I guess I do not have the drive charts in front of me right now because I got up from my computer. But, you know, they were able, obviously, to run the ball late in the game because they were up so much. So the only thing I'll say is this, New England is going to need to establish the run in this game, which may be easier said than done because, as we saw last year with Denver and as we've seen really for 3 years, it's hard to pass on Seattle, man. It really is.
It really is. Although Aaron Rodgers, again, he had some surprising success attacking them underneath. You talked about Brady not being able to go long. I wonder how much that part of it even matters because long is where I think Richard Sherman is at his best, as we saw in the Green Bay game in the NFC Championship, which really it's the same thing we should have been seeing from Peyton Manning last year in the Super Bowl. It really shows you how disjointed they must have been because Aaron Rodgers showed, again, these guys, Bill Barnwell of Grantland says they may be the best secondary of all time, but as we saw in the NFC Championship game, they can be had. And not that Rodgers was decimating them, but he was effective against them. And, again, for a real film nerd like myself, you could put this on pay-per-view. If you had a spy cam of Belichick in his film room preparing for the Legion of Boom, what true football fan wouldn't want to see that, Kyle?
Obviously, I say this always with New England. The key for them, the number one player to watch, I can't remember the last time I didn't think this going into a game. Maybe if it was just a game where they were expected to win in a route and it just didn't matter. It's Rob Gronkowski, who is, you know, kind of a knob, but, you know, is really, really good. It's just much better than every other tight end in the league. And is such a huge advantage. It will be interesting to see how Seattle attempts to cover him because you talk about maybe going underneath. Gronk is the guy to go to there, and I'm really interested to see how Seattle defends Gronkowski.
Here's the interesting thing about that is that Seattle actually, if the secondary, and again, there's no chinks in the armor. There are none when you're first in the league in passing defense. But against tight ends this year, not as effective as they were against even star wide receivers. And you saw a little bit of that in the NFC Championship game when Aaron Rodgers was even bringing the tight end into the game, arguably for the first time all year. So the fact that the word is out that apparently they're going to have Cam Chancellor on him a good part of the game there. Again, you know, from a football nerd perspective, I don't want to be prisoner of the moment here. This is the 49th Super Bowl, but for one-on-one matchups, guys in their prime, Cam Chancellor, Rob Gronkowski, that's one for the ages in my book as far as one-on-one matchups in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I mean, as Gronk goes, I mean, New England, it's funny. I mean, if you look back kind of at the, you know, obviously it's recent times. He hasn't been with the team forever, you know, dating back to the beginning of their run, but the times when New England has struggled in the last couple seasons have been the times when they haven't had Gronkowski. And he is a difference maker. And, you know, I think he's a big part of the reason that I think New England doesn't get blown out like Denver did. I mean, granted, that was a worst-case scenario for Denver. They got caught deer in the headlights, it almost seemed. But, you know, because of Gronkowski and for other reasons, too, you know, New England should do better than Denver did last year.
Really, that's the case. But when you look at it, it's almost eerie as far as looking back to last year. Seattle returning a team that is, again, almost identical, some differences in there. But playing a team out of the AFC, a very, very star-studded team on the other side. Obviously, we talk about Brady and Gronk, and to an extent, on the offensive side of the ball, different from Denver last year, it doesn't go that much deeper on offense when we're talking real star power. Defensively, though, New England really has it over Denver of a year ago when you're looking at Revis Island, when you're looking at Will Fork, when you're looking at guys like that. New England with their defensive depth, the media has had a lot of fun this week in covering the personalities involved in this, but for star power, one team out of the AFC, one team out of the NFC, you really couldn't do much better than what you've got here. Plus, at the marquee position, quarterback, you've got, and I've been making a comparison for a long time, Brady versus arguably, and I would say young Brady, not stylistically, but as far as being a guy who's just a winner. So there's just a lot of juicy star power for people to talk about, game plan about, and look forward to on Sunday.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. You there's that W word, winner, and
yep.
I kind of mocked a little bit earlier, and it's really interesting. And this is, and ultimately, I'll just make my pick now.
Yep.
New England at one point in the Brady era, you'll remember, I mean, everyone thought this guy was infallible. They won their first 9 playoffs. I have a Pro Football Reference right now as I stutter. They won their first 9, make it 10 playoff games with Tom Brady. That's what I thought it was. Okay, I'm trying, I don't really like the way this table is displayed. They won their first 10 playoff games with Brady. And everyone's like, oh, Tom Brady, most clutch player of all time. It's unbelievable. Oh, my goodness. Guy can't lose. Since that time, they are
5. Much less than that. I'll fill in the blank
yes.
for you.
Six
there.
Six. They are, yes. As I count on air, that's always classy. I think it's 7 in... 9-8
yeah.
their last 17 playoff games. So it's funny. Things like this regress back to the mean. And you talk about New England and Seattle. There are a lot of great comparisons. Seattle, obviously, we haven't even mentioned this, going for the first repeat since New England did it in 2003-04.
Yes. Yes.
They are now what New England was then. They're going to win this game. It'll be closer than last year. I don't know how much closer, but they're going to win the game. They'll repeat. They'll be the one with all these clutch gene stats that I think get overhyped. And we will then see, can the Seahawks become the first team ever to three-peat? I've been on them almost this whole way. Remember, I got on them the year before they won the Super Bowl, 2 years ago. And I thought they got jobbed against Atlanta in that playoff game that I mentioned it all the way back at the beginning of the show, and I never stopped mentioning really for 2 years. But... I just think that it's Seattle's time now. New England, look, Owen, it's not like Brady does lose big games. 0-2 in his last 2 Super Bowls against some kind of mediocre Giants teams. The Seahawks team is much better than either of those 2 Giants teams. I just think that New England is facing, a team that is what they were 10 years ago, just a more complete team on both sides of the ball. The Seattle Seahawks win Super Bowl 49.
You talk about Brady not losing any playoff games to a certain point. I remember like it was yesterday. It was on a Saturday night. They were playing Denver, and you just sort of took it for granted they were going to move past them, and they didn't. And it felt like an earthquake at the time. And then now it's, if Tom Brady wins or loses a playoff game, you shrug because, as you said, he's about a 500 quarterback, give or take, since then in the playoffs. But, to that point in time, when it hadn't happened, it was a hell of a run. It was better than most people had ever had. And that's not exactly the run Russell Wilson has had because of that Atlanta game. They could be going for a three-peat if not for that Atlanta game.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked their odds the entire way, as you were saying that year. As far as a pick for the game, no deflated balls here. I will take Seattle. And you know what? You can have that point. I don't even need that point. I'll take Seattle to win. I think I said last year 19-17. I thought it was going to be a pretty close game. Said they'd hold Denver under 20 for the first time all year, which people thought was a ballsy pick, and it happened. I'm pretty much picking it right down the middle. Likeliest scenario, field goal game. I'm going to say Seattle 23-20 as they defend their Super Bowl World Heavyweight Championship.
Okay, you're giving an exact score, huh? So that would be although you're not giving out, that would be the under too. I kind of like, if you want to get a little exotic on that ass, people, look at the first half under. First halves of Super Bowls, generally lower scoring than the second, because it takes, the offense is kind of the old Greg the Hammer Valentine routine there. It takes 15 minutes to get warmed up. And I think you can get the number 24.5, which means you have room for 3 touchdowns and a field goal. So
Go ahead.
No, that's what I'm saying. So, I kind of like the first half under 24.5. So, I think of the last 7 Super Bowls, 5 have seen the first half with the lower score. 1 was dead even, And then, you know, there was one that it was higher scoring. I think it might have been the Baltimore San Francisco one.
Right.
I can't remember which one it was, but it was one of them.
All the sand's out of the hourglass, buddy. But great point there. You're right. A lot of times the game sucks in the first half, picks up in the second half. We'll see what happens, and Kyle will convene again after the season.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.